We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Also think about the fact that often a lot of people come to me already with a diagnosis from a primary care doctor.
Yeah.
How long do y'all see your primary
care? Not long, Jay. 20 minutes, if not 15 minutes.
15 minutes at most. And often that's through self-report.
All right. Welcome, Couch Chronicle viewers. We're back in it again.
We are.
All right. So today we're going to start with a mindfulness as we normally have been starting before we kind of get to chitter chatter. And today, mindfulness I'm going to do is focus on your I ams. Mm-hmm. So the I ams that you tell yourself, the basically some judgments that you've had about yourself, whether it's this week, this morning. That's kind of been showing up. So what I want us to do is that we're going to start with like two cleansing breath. You could choose to close your eyes with this one, or you could choose to have low gaze. It's up to you. Okay. All right. So let's start again with our taking a first deep breath in. Opening your mouth and exhale. As you take the second inhale, I want you to notice the sensation of your chest. I want you to notice how it feels to exhale and blow out. So let's start taking our second breath. Inhale. Open your mouth. Exhale. As you sit in your chair comfortably, I want you to bring your mind to thoughts that you've had this morning about yourself, the I ams that you've been telling yourself this week, this moment. Notice the sensation that you feel as you were recollecting these thoughts. Notice how your body's responding to them. I'm just gonna sit here and just notice the different I ams that we've been telling ourselves lately. If your mind gets distracted, just bring yourself back to your breath and just noticing. I also want you to think about any action you took after you noticed those I am, those judgments you had about yourself, if you can recall. I'm gonna spend 30 seconds noticing. Also thinking about how your I ams have served you. As our practice is coming to an end, I want you to take a deep breath in. I want you to open your mouth, exhale. Whenever you're ready at your time, bring yourself back and open your eyes. All right, who wants to start?
I can start.
All right, tell me your top three.
Okay, so top three, I had the thought, I am tired, mm-hmm. I am lit. And I am ready. That theory that came up for me today. And not too many other thoughts around that, though. So I mm-hmm. thought that was interesting. Like, there weren't, like, images or things that came nice. Up around, like, mm-hmm. being ready or being lit. It just was what it was in that moment. So I did afterwards kind of have the thought of, like, okay, you're pretty... pretty tuned in today.
All right. So you noticed that you were grounded?
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Mm-hmm. Any judgments around those?
No.
Good deal. All right. Thanks, Ty. Hey, love.
For me today, noticed that I'm tired. As I was reflecting, you know, throughout the week, noticing mm-hmm. different things that were showing up for me. You know, it's that time of the month. And so noticing that I am often more tired mm-hmm. and then also noticing that I am lazy, kind of
yeah.
coming uh-huh. around that as mm-hmm. well too, around the limited, you know, production that I felt like I did this week as a result of being, you know, so tired,
mm-hmm.
you know, not feeling, seeing images of me like wanting to get off the phone because I'm like, yeah, I don't have the energy,
coming for you.
You know, after yeah. getting off of work, crawling right into bed, laying there for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, yeah.
Images, no judgment around those mm-hmm. different images at all in
okay.
terms of like, oh, like that was bad, that was good, or
mm-hmm.
And my body was often pretty calm and mm-hmm. non-reactive to okay. those images.
Okay.
I also noticed myself thinking about the term I am bloated too, that mm. showed up because I did notice I was very bloated this week. And mm-hmm. one of the things that you had said was like, what were some actions around that? But I did notice some urges of like, I'm going to the gym next week, kind of like they
give
showing up. Get back into it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I've also, the eating habits this week has been interesting. Yeah, but again, didn't show up during, you know, the mindfulness, but just kind of reflecting that, planning for the future.
All right, good deal. Thanks, Steph. My I ams were, I'm doing too much, I'm busy, and I'm tired.
Yeah.
So all these were coming up, and there were some judgments around like being busy and doing too much. I think for me, my nature is wanting to like get an opportunity and show up for everyone yeah. and everything, and also not observing my limits around that. So I had some thoughts around like, okay, you're falling back into a trap of not like taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I was having those thoughts and dialogues were showing up for me doing the mindfulness. And I was like, okay, let's go back into just the I am. I didn't take any action towards any of them after I had the thought. If anything, I think it fueled me more to be like, okay, yeah, I'll get this done. Oh yeah, I'll do it. Or, you know,
sure.
yeah. But what I did notice that last night, as we are, you know, going to be partaking in like fun time later, I noticed that I was like, I was going to do the two things that I had told you, but I was like, you know what? No, I'm only doing one. I'm tired. And I like threw in the towel and sort of like pushing myself to do everything and then, you know, not do that. So that came. I was like, oh, you actually did kind of observe your limit last night. I did.
Good.
I did.
Good.
I did. So yeah. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you for your offering.
You're welcome.
I think that kind of segues us like the I am statement really works well with what we're going to be talking about today.
Yep.
With diagnosing. Mm-hmm. I know we've all heard like I am depressed.
Yep.
I am this. I am that. I am mm-hmm. anxious. And so we want to talk a little bit about like diagnosis and maybe how to create some degrees mm-hmm. of separation. I think that my biggest thing is that like people are not their diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
The language that you use should reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling depressed or like I'm feeling anxious versus like internalizing it as who you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is for viewers out there, what is a diagnosis? Hmm.
Should I partake in what Please. That is? All right. A diagnosis is just a medical term that is given by a healthcare professional. So it's symptoms based on symptoms that you show up. It could be medical symptoms, mental health symptoms, physical symptoms. Then based on that, you're given what we call a diagnosis.
Right.
And that's a way of treating. It's supposed to help better treat those symptoms. So
it's like the first
those symptoms that you show.
Of treatment, right? So I guess another thing to talk about is diagnosing comes from the medical model. So the medical model takes the perspective that there is something wrong that needs to be
fixed.
Yeah.
So it looks at categories of like dysfunction, right? Symptoms, if you will, things that aren't supposed to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at a diagnosis from the mental health perspective, we're looking at mental illness, mental dysfunction, emotional dysfunction, or instability.
That's interesting, right? Because I do think that the idea of diagnosis and that being a part of the medical model does not necessarily align with like the approach that I would take and many therapists would take, being more within that wellness model, like trying to tolerate and identify things that kind of make our lives worth living or kind of help us find joy.
Yeah.
So it is like they are contradictory. There's that dialectical tension.
Yeah.
Like there's something between like the label perhaps saying like there's something wrong with you that needs to be fixed, and your therapist kind of promoting like wellness.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think even the word, like Stephanie alluded, like the word diagnosis is saying something wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm kind of sort of like maybe jump the gun of what we're going to like get into. Mm-hmm. But I think as people of color and minorities, the word diagnosis is something that's kind of been weaponized against us, and it's not something that we kind of look towards.
Oh, sure.
And you bring a sense of like anxiety around it. So I think what you're saying, to your point, you know, we want to look at the holistic self as a therapist, and then there's the part where we do need that bit of information in order to provide that holistic.
That's interesting, right? Because I'm not sure if I believe that diagnosing itself is inherently like discriminatory. The medical model is, right?
Yes.
Like, that is certainly something that has been weaponized against people of color.
Yeah.
And in a way that is oppressive.
So yeah.
I was going to say the medical system in general has been oppressive toward Black people of color. When you think about when, you know, the first biologist or like the renowned biologist, they're the ones that weaponized racism, right? In terms of like saying that the white brain was the superior brain and then everything else below.
And that's exactly what comes to mind. But that's exactly what comes to mind. Yeah.
Think about diagnosing there's something wrong with you that's coming.
Yeah.
So where is the I guess the model that you are comparing to something wrong.
Wrong, right? Yeah.
That's the trick. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm like pushing for my clients to ask questions about or like be curious about. Like,
yeah.
If I'm feeling anxious, does my anxiety look the same as the criteria that is in the DSM-5?
Exactly.
Given that many of the research is done on like middle class white males, not necessarily
I mean, based on even what you said, like historically the DSM has had things in there that were not necessarily at least now is not seen as a dysfunction.
Sure.
So for example, homosexuality used to be something that was in the DSM as a diagnostic, as something that you needed to fix.
Yeah.
But I also think that we want to understand why diagnosing is important in the mental health field, or just in general, because what it does is it provides you with a starting point and it helps categorize certain things. As you kind of alluded to, there's a lot of symptoms that can be seen across multiple disorders. Even when we look at like being when you're sick, like with a, mm-hmm. like a medical illness.
Yeah.
How many people will go to WebMD or Google?
Yeah, Dr. Like, Google. They call them Dr. Google, Jeff.
You got cancer.
Dr. Google.
All of these other mm-hmm. things because there's certain symptoms of, like, for example, hypertension or what's mm-hmm. called hyperventilate or shortness of breath.
Yeah.
Shortness of breath is often something you see mm-hmm. across a lot of different
diagnoses,
but doesn't necessarily mean that you have this high order diagnosis. Right. You need more information, you know, and that's why a medical professional, someone who's trained to see more than just the symptoms
right.
and mm-hmm. more around like your history and,
yep.
you know, how okay. race, you know, plays a part
yeah.
is important. So be careful about like you noticing something on social media or mm-hmm. you hearing something from a friend and you're noticing some similarities and then feeling like that is what you have.
Self-diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you brought that up because I do want to also kind of touch on the point that you made around like why it is important, right? Like, mm-hmm. yes, it definitely is a starting point mm-hmm. and like people needing to also recognize that it is not the end all.
That was my comment. That was going to be my follow-up.
Your
yeah.
mental health journey or like yeah. whatever. It's not the end all be all. And also thinking about the fact that like when you are receiving a diagnosis or providing a diagnosis, it mm-hmm. does require all of those things, mm-hmm. compassion, consideration for the person's like experiences, context, mm-hmm. like all mm-hmm. of those things are very important when providing a diagnosis, but that's not the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also believe, like, you know, what I tell clients is that you get the diagnosis for informational purposes, but it doesn't define who you are.
Right.
Yeah. It just gives you an understanding of the behavior. And that doesn't mean it condone the behavior, right?
Yeah.
So it's just being very mindful, like, it's an information, mm-hmm. but it's not a carry. I'm not like, oh, I'm Judalyn, I'm bipolar, or I'm Judalyn, I have schizophrenia, or I'm Judalyn. No, it's more like, I'm behaving a certain way. Now I'm becoming more aware and have an understanding of where that behavior kind of come from.
Yeah.
And
that
also,
mm-hmm. you're taking though, Jay, is coming from us, I would say, breaking off from the medical model.
Exactly.
Because if you think about it, even in the medical field, diagnoses change based on the intensity of the symptoms that is showing mm-hmm. up for you, right? I think mm-hmm. about often, for example, people who have hypotension versus mm-hmm.
hypertension. Yeah.
And those things, like, you could have certain symptoms mm-hmm. for several months, and then for the other half of the year you have a different symptomology
yeah.
and then your diagnosis changes. So to say that you are something
mm-hmm.
came from, I think, that medical model of like people wanting to be seen in order yeah. to be treated.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. And I think that you brought up some great points too around like the self-diagnosis piece and also looking at like sometimes some certain diagnoses can be trendy.
Yeah.
Like in my youth, like ADHD was very trendy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, yes. but mm-hmm. it was very much like any brown child that is disruptive, talking mm-hmm. too much, doing too much in class, hyper, you are automatically having ADHD.
And even yeah. if the symptom there is too much, that's not the one to look at.
Right? Well, I have a personal, I think I've shared this with you guys. I have a personal, recollection with that only because, you know, coming here from Haiti and the way that I was used to learning was very interactive mm-hmm. and coming to the American system, being forced to kind of like sit for 8 hours and not as much active that was going on. I remember yeah. they talked to my mom and they told her like, you know, we want her to get tested for ADHD. And I remember my mom was like, there's nothing wrong with her. You have her sitting down for too long. She needs to move and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it was the quickness to kind of like label
because
me and saying because I was struggling to sit still. I was mm-hmm. talking a lot. I was fidgety or I couldn't even focus. Mm-hmm. And then at one point we learned that I needed glasses. So part of it was like,
so
it was
a, other factors, but you noticed yeah. there, they wanted to diagnose you because you were engaging in behaviors that
yep.
outside
of the norm. Exactly.
Often, norm does not mean normal folks.
Right? Exactly.
That if everyone else is doing this one thing,
mm-hmm.
you're not necessarily taking to that one thing that mm-hmm. means you're outside the norm. That
yeah.
doesn't mean that it's normal.
Yeah.
And like, an expected behavior. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, that was an example of that for me. Mm-hmm. That came up to me when I was young, but my thing was socializing. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that I could talk and engage with certain people and definitely still take your information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was, you know, quick to doing stuff, but also I was a hands-on learner.
Yeah. Yes.
Often school is really only for verbal or visual learners.
Yeah.
And so for me, who was someone who needed to get their hands in something and talking, conversations were ways in which that I learned, that wasn't necessarily reinforced in the school system. So what they did, they put me in honors classes. And there's this weird like thing coming around now that all the kids that they put in gifted and talented, low-key had ADHD.
Yeah.
They just had to like give them
something to do.
So they gave them higher order, challenging things. But that's also where the performance part comes in with like ADHD and such. But
So even like the self-diagnosis piece, I think that I can be sometimes critical of people who feel like you're not a medical professional, you can't say you have this, you can't say you have that. Because I mean, in reality, if you are giving somebody an assessment for a specific diagnosis, likely that's the first time you're meeting that person.
Mm-hmm.
You are with that person for
45 minutes or an hour.
45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. That person is with themselves every day.
Yep.
So to be fair, I think that a lot of the information that we do gather when diagnosing is self-diagnosing.
Exactly.
It's a real subjectiveness and time. But I also think about the fact that often a lot of people come to me already with a diagnosis from a primary care doctor. How long do y'all see your primary care?
Not long, Jay. 20 minutes, if not 15 minutes.
15 minutes most. And often that's through self-report.
I have most recently changed primary care physicians, and like I see a Black woman, and I think like for the first time in my experience, she actually pulled out the assessment for depression and anxiety, like went through the actual form. I don't think I've ever had that experience with my primary care physician
doing that. Ever. No, for sure. I also, to the point that you were making, is like I empower clients to know, to let them know that you are like, you know you better than anybody know you. To the point, like you like you said, you're the expert of yourself. So to the point where, like you said, we only spend 45 minutes to an hour, even to 2 hours doing the assessment. And also trusting yourself. I think it's easy to say like, oh, this is Stephanie the therapist. She's giving this diagnosis. So her word is true. And this is, you know, whoever. But also noticing that, what do you yourself notice about yourself? Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a lot of both and here in this discussion for sure. Because I think from, in my experience, what I've observed with clients is that a lot of it, a lot of their diagnoses can be internalized. Like we all work in DBT. So by the time people are getting DBT therapy,
they've
like had a laundry list of therapists that have told them and reinforced the idea that like you are this thing, right? Like you have BPD. Like,
And
the language people use, like you said, where it becomes my anxiety, my depression. There's a certain level of
ownership,
like, and assimilation into self around this thing.
Yeah.
And with us, because we're all DBT therapists, we take the perspective that we don't really
focus on diagnoses
because we take the perspective of you want to create a life worth living. And you notice creating a life worth living doesn't mean that you're subtracting or deleting parts of yourself in order to do that. It's around being able to acknowledge parts of yourself in order to make better choices. I kind of like tie it to people who are diabetic, right? Well, oftentimes a lot of diagnoses, people don't want the diagnoses because of the connotations around it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of negative language that comes in it, but a diabetic often puts themselves in more danger when they don't acknowledge that they have a certain flavor or uniqueness about them.
Yeah.
Once they acknowledge that about themselves, they're better able to make choices around how they spend their time, what food that they eat, which then increases the quality of their life. Yeah. That's the same thing, I feel like, with mental health.
For sure.
The more that you're willing to acknowledge your anxiety, your depression, borderline personality disorder, any eating disorders out there for some folks. Disordered eating is big in the Black community, by the way.
Yeah.
And overlooked.
You know, like once you are able to acknowledge those things, you're able to make better choices that enhances your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I definitely like realized much later in my life that like there were probably some like diagnoses that if like for example like around like restrictive eating, I definitely experienced that like all through like high school, college, and I didn't really have a label for it until I became a therapist myself and started working with my own therapist. And she's like, and you do this how often?
Right.
How many hours are you going without eating? And so then that kind of put things into perspective for me around like being more intentional about it.
Yeah.
And internalize it like, oh my gosh, I'm like restricting.
Kind of switching it up a little bit around, because I've been getting older clients, and I noticed who weren't giving a diagnosis of a learning disability or dyslexia or autism or ADHD because their family didn't know in the community. And the really people of color who's coming was like, you know, I knew something was wrong because I struggled like the other kids, but I, you know, I didn't know what it was. So they tend to, that's that socioeconomic status, and they're not right?
I also like to say that that receiving a diagnosis can also be like a privileged place. Like there is a lot of like fine, it can be expensive, especially in your adulthood.
Yeah.
Like, I think that like the exam for being tested for autism as an adult can be like upwards of like $2,000 to $3,000.
$2,000. Same thing for ADHD for an adult.
And also access.
Exactly.
Right? That's another thing as well too. I will say there's more
to adequate resources.
There's more resources for ADHD than even when we were growing up. And mind you, it was a hot topic back then. So can you imagine all these people are
way before,
diagnosed with it, but in terms of the resources and the knowledge and the understanding.
Treatment.
For it, right, is a lot different, because especially since ADHD was often diagnosed in kids and adolescents.
Right.
And there was not a lot of folks in adulthood.
What I'm about to say, but it was also more white kids in adolescence.
Yes.
So, because to the point of, if you were born in the 70s, in the 60s, or even early 80s, or you know, you weren't really giving much attention. You were just a troubled person, a troubled kid, or they just don't know how to get it. It was dismissed.
They set them on the short bus.
Yeah.
Or on special education.
Yeah. The short bus that didn't even belong, and all they just needed is an accommodation for it. And this is coming to mind because I'm working with two Black males now who just coming to see me who literally I diagnosed them with adult ADHD, but it really got in the way of them going to college. Of seeing more for themselves. And even now they're like, well, you know, when I'm reading, I kind of see things and I kind of get lost in it. And I'm like, okay, what do you mean you see things? Because, you know, when you're dyslexic, what happened? Because, you know, you see things. Exactly. So he was like, really? So then we started talking about it. And I kind of referred, like, for him to kind of get tested for it. What do you, Lord behold, he's dyslexic. But that doesn't mean he didn't get it. He just needs that specialized understanding of it.
You saying that, I'm pretty sure there's people in my family.
Yeah.
But it was also this thing of like, there's so much shame
around
that.
Exactly.
And then it turns into, well, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how many Black men will often who struggle because of these different things and because of their shame around it or not wanting to be made fun of or not wanting to be whatever, they just chuck it up to it. Like
that's not my thing. Exactly.
So like you said, it limits opportunities for that racial
The lack of access
comes into play, where if I was able to get the same help and intervention that, you know, Tommy got in middle school or in high school, who knows where I could have been in many different things.
Yeah, because they both reported that they end up coming home and getting spanked because the teacher will report that they're not listening, they're this, or they're, you know, they're failing. So to them, it really just shut them down, you know, to their experiences.
I think it's like definitely access, lack of knowledge and understanding of like what certain things look like for us versus others is definitely a big barrier to diagnoses. And I also think about like the fact that, like you said, shame around that. I think that even myself, like the diagnoses that I received as a kid, I was diagnosed with ADHD. I now kind of know that to be a little bit more different now. But my mom receiving that diagnosis for me when I was a kid, it was very much like, oh, well, she's not taking medication. So
yeah, same, same.
But the way that she structured my life was like very rigid. I had a timer for everything. A timer for getting dressed in the morning. A timer for doing my homework. So that structure allowed me to be able to be functional in the space. But as soon as I was out of it, I'm like,
didn't have those things in place. But it also shows you there that often diagnosing meant a singular intervention, and often that intervention not being one that historically, like, because why do Black people not want to take medication? Because historically, it's been used as
weaponized. But look at the thing about the Tuskegee
About birth control. Like all the different things. So, like,
for sure,
taking medication, and especially back then, the medication that they give you for ADHD, I'm pretty sure, is a stimulant.
Would change the behavior completely.
And it also kind of depends on the person.
And the I was just about to say that.
And if there's substance abuse in the family, all that stuff kind of plays a role. So diagnosing is very important in terms of looking at historical factors. But like when you're even looking at a diagnosis, you want to look at how you, this quote-unquote dysfunction is showing up in multiple areas. It's not just in one space.
I think about people being over-diagnosed as well. Like we're in the DMV area, and like in my experience, I think that a lot of people that were like maybe born in like the most rough area of this time, PCP and crack epidemic were diagnosed with schizophrenia.
I was just about to say, I worked there.
It's trauma.
Yes, it's trauma and depression. Yeah.
By your experience, by your environment, by who you are. But they, by the time they get to a medical professional, all the context is lost.
It's lost completely. And so, then they drug them with a lot of medication and the hard medication that either keeps them in the addictive behavior or takes their brain completely.
Exactly. I've seen that quite often.
Yeah, because I used to work at St. Elizabeth for my internship.
Quite often. And I think I'm even like starting off as a new therapist. My very first few clients I received were diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I'm thinking to myself, like, we're going through this person's history. They have a lot of experiences with neglect. They
sexual abuse.
They experience like some sort of like poverty or like need for something. Neglect.
All of that
from their home.
Yeah.
Like people that have like immigrated to this country. So there's so much trauma that is aligned with all of those things. And like by the time you get to a medical professional, people are just seeing the like, oh, this person is paranoid.
But this is also the culture bias and the assumptions too that kind of plays a role, right? I think, you know, one thing, you know, Stephanie and I, we all three of us talk about this because we're all clinical supervisors, is like we make this new therapist be very culturally aware of like how their biases and also educating yourself about other people's culture. One of the major things that I remember, it's funny you said that because you brought this up, is that I remember I was an intern then, but they were diagnosing this person with schizophrenia because they were talking about, I talk to God and this is what God tell me and so forth and so on. They were African-American, this client was. And I'm like, you took it as that? I think they were just expressing like they were praying and this is how they feel and give it. It's so important into that. And I think, you know, if you don't know, as you know, as someone of color, and they tell you this thing, so then you start to not trust yourself and not trust this because you have this doctor or you have this psychiatrist or this person telling you this, and now it's on your record, and people don't know how that paper, if it travels you, when you get to the next person, they're not even going to want to hear you. They just look at that paper.
And this is what I often, sometimes when I get new clients, I don't read it first.
Yes.
I don't care what anyone says. Language already directs how you think about
exactly.
things. And a diagnosis is going to immediately make you think already what interventions, what this, what
yeah.
anticipate the behavior.
Exactly. The behavior of the person, I was just about to say, yeah.
So, like, even what you said, I fell into that same kind of trap. I had a client, and this was earlier in my work, I had a client who was Middle Eastern, and they had been given the diagnosis of schizoaffective. Schizoaffective is a lot different from schizophrenia.
It's like a combination of experiencing schizophrenia with also
bipolar.
Yeah, so it's like, think about, often it's a mood. Anger, anxiety, sadness, that will then be the thing that happens before a hallucination, before an intense belief about yourself or someone else. That's often the difference between schizophrenia and schizoaffective. So my client at the time had the schizoaffective diagnosis, and they were telling me that they were planning to go back to their country, and they were going to marry this person that they've never seen before, and they, you know, they've talked to this person, but they've never seen this person before. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, is this a delusion? Is this, like, are they, because again, they have this, what's it called?
Diagnosis.
And they have told me when, so, like, cause there was a change that was coming. They often talk about when there's change that will shift and have them engaging in this way. And I was like, wait, is this a thing? But I took the stance of, like, let me still be curious
about it.
I do know my mind was turning into thinking that they were in a psychosis. Come to find out, they were
in arranged marriage.
In arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and
which is huge in their culture.
And I remember after kind of talking with them more, and also having a conversation with one of the family members at the time, that coming to, and me being like, if I could have,
you had ran with your thought.
Yeah.
Easily just went into, okay, now let's do some reality testing.
Right.
Here, like all other stuff. And me, of course, I'm a Black person, but I'm not the knower of all cultures.
Exactly.
You know? So that is an example of the client being the expert.
Yeah. And I think that the curiosity part is really key, right? Like, whether you're the therapist, whether you're the client, whether you're a support or a family member, being curious about what those things mean and not just accepting it at face value, like, this is what you are, so this is all we're working with.
Okay, so
am I a bad therapist if I choose not to give a diagnosis or don't prioritize diagnosing?
Well, I would say it depends on who you're working for.
That part.
You are not a good therapist if you work for a place that is Medicaid or Medicare funded and you do not give a diagnosis. That is fraudulent behavior.
Right. So clarifying that, right? Like, that diagnosis is something that is required to use
for insurance. Yeah, for any insurance.
Just Medicaid,
it's not just Medicaid, insurance period.
People that are not medically or professionally trained in mental health to see a certain dialogue for you to be able to receive your services.
And that's why diagnosing is also something you want to be cautious about when you are giving it, because oftentimes with, like, insurance, especially for folks who get their insurance through work, it will be reflected in paperwork and oftentimes will shift people's idea
of it,
unfortunate. And that's why also a lot of times people have a challenge with certain diagnoses, because there is that negative connotation that can affect their job opportunities and just other, like, respect or, you know, status
around it. Yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna say, like, no, you're not necessarily a bad therapist for not prioritizing diagnoses or not giving one, depending on the context of, like, when that is happening, like you said, right?
I do also think that not prioritizing diagnosis and focusing more on like making lemonade out of lemons, like even if these are the symptoms and things that you're showing up with, like how can we work with that? How can we live life and experience within that is what is important to me. So like for my private clients that or people that pay out of pocket, sometimes I don't necessarily need to give them a label or a diagnosis specifically. We can kind of just work with
what you're showing up with. Exactly.
Like, we can work with the symptoms. We can work with the experiences, and that is okay.
So I don't like the word bad, so I'm going to say no. You're not a bad therapist because I don't like the word bad. Because I myself practice the same way where if you pay me out of pocket, if you tell me you need a diagnosis for your insurance based on what you report, I'll give you one. And it's not something that I discuss or I talk about unless you want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It is not my point of focus, so it doesn't have to be your point of focus. Like I said, I don't think it's only negligent if you are choosing not to acknowledge the symptoms that the client shows in order to better treat them. But if you're choosing not to do it on your basis of like, you can use no, you acknowledge the symptoms that the client is showing, but you're not focusing on it because it's not the focal point of how you're going to get the client to live in their life, live the life that they want to live based on these limitations or these understandings about themselves.
Exactly.
So that's how I feel about
it. Just to be clear, you don't, I believe a diagnosis is not necessarily needed, but assessment and understanding of the client is 100% needed.
Right.
And important.
Those are different things.
Yes.
And I think that's a really I'm glad you drove that point home as we're coming to an end, right? Like the diagnosing and the assessment part can be separate.
Yep.
And really the gathering of information is what is most important and should be prioritized when working with clients.
Agreed. Agreed.
Cool. Good. All right, guys. We are going to close it off. Well, I'm Stephanie.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Sparkle Ty.
Good deal.
Bye, guys.
See you next time.